talking about a din that's related to the Mishnah, but hadn't actually spoken about the din that's really there. This concept of Davar Ha'avad, that the Mishnah tells us that if the workers pull out, so if it's something that is a Davar Ha'avad, something that the Balabas will lose out because an investment that he has made will go to waste, so then he has a remedy. Then he can either hire somebody else at their expense, or he can kind of trick them into working at the original agreement. And we had been discussing a parallel concept that's not actually here in the Mishnah, that the Shulchan Aruch had ruled that there is a similar obligation towards the workers, that if the boss pulls out on them, he has to pay them. And then we discussed all of the ramifications, the potential explanations of that. So as an appropriate bookend to that, before we leave that topic, so what about the basis for that whole concept? Is this actually in the Mishnah? What is the nature of this obligation of the workers to uphold their agreement, so to speak? Or maybe that's already categorizing it. What's the nature of this remedy that's available to the employer, that he can fix things, he can find a way to get the work that he had contracted these guys to do? So there are a number of theories, and for the most part, they parallel, but not 100%, they parallel the theories that we saw in the other direction. But that itself is a question, because one of the theories of the other direction, one of the theories of why the employer has to pay is because the suggestion that Davar Ha'avad cuts in both directions. So it's interesting to note that Davar Ha'avad itself is broken up into a number of explanations which could parallel the other explanations. So in the context of boss to workers, we have a number of explanations, Davar Ha'avad being one of them. But Davar Ha'avad itself, in the worker-boss direction, itself is explained a number of ways, some of which are the other answers. What am I talking about? So, first of all, one approach that you find is the Ritva. The Ritva, again, the same Ritva, it's parallel that he said in the other direction. The Ritva says, why is it that the workers can be forced to work or have other workers hired on their cheshbon? Because of this principle of, you trusted me and now you lost out. The same ritva, the same idea, that if somebody loses because he put his faith in you, so then there is a obligation to make up for that loss. And based on that, the Chazon Ish interpreted the ritva, and really the ritva himself, say that therefore, what is this? This is really a straight chiyuv mamon. This is really a monetary obligation. That essentially, if you're liable for causing somebody a loss by making a promise you don't live up to. So that's what these workers did in the Mishnah. And that's why the boss has this remedy. So you could ask a couple of questions on that explanation. One of them, Aaron.
If it's Chiyuv Mamon, does that mean that they can say we're going to pay you? And if he says, no, I want you to work, then maybe if someone Chiyuv Mamon, they can pay to hire new ones, or can they force them to do the work?
See, it's interesting, you're asking, actually, there's actually three separate questions in what you're asking, but the phrasing was a little bit, was maybe a little bit questionable, because he says only a chiyuv mamon. It's actually more of a chiddush to say that it is a chiyuv mamon than what it is, because we know from the Mishnah that he can have these remedies to get the work done. But what if he doesn't have those remedies? Let's say it's not possible for him to pull that off. So can we go further and say that he can actually collect money from them? So is it actually a chiyuv mamon? So that's what that ritva sounds like, but that doesn't seem to accord with what we've seen so far. And we've mentioned, and we'll mention today, at least one dissenting opinion, but the general assumption is that he can't actually collect cash from them. He can just get them to actually work. So that's a question itself, and let's come back to that in a few minutes. And you asked actually a third question in that, which is related to, I think, what Adina brought up yesterday, and we'll talk about it today also. Can he force them to work? Right? Was the Adina asked that question yesterday?
Can they force him to So the, yes, it was, can they force him to...
Right, so that comes up in this parallel situation here. So let's talk about that today as well. So those are both good questions. Hold on to those for a second. But another question that you could ask is, why is this concept of socher lehem, that he can hire somebody else on their cheshbon? So that's limited. It's not limited to how much he was willing to pay them, because we find, based on the Gemara and the postgame, that it could be as much as double, let's say. Double what he was going to pay them. But still, why is it limited at all? If there is a loss, so why don't we say whatever the loss is, if it's double, triple, whatever it comes out to, shouldn't be limited. So the Ritva himself does kind of address this a little bit. And the Ritva's language, it sounds like the issue is that that was the context of this quote-unquote promise, or this unspoken promise. You know, that essentially, if the whole yisod of the Ritva is that if I make a commitment to you and I don't follow through and you lose money, I'm liable because I'm essentially committing to follow through. So how much am I committing? So it's reasonable to say that when I make this commitment, listen, I'll be there for you. And if I'm not there, it's my fault. So what am I thinking of? What am I imagining happening? What's the worst that could happen? All right, if you can't find me, you'll hire somebody else. And if the rates have changed, maybe you'll have to pay twice as much. But the idea that you'll have to pay more than twice as much, it's not really a foreseeable possibility. So if it's not really a foreseeable possibility, so then you could say that it creates a limit in this original commitment. This parallels, by the way, the concept of asmachta, which comes up in some of these discussions as well. That asmachta basically means that, not the asmachta in the sense of a pasuk that's meant to be around as a din, but asmachta in mamonism, that if I make you a commitment that, listen, if I don't do something, you can penalize me. So that condition sometimes takes effect, sometimes doesn't take effect. It depends. And if it's a type of condition which, by its very nature, you can tell, I don't think it's ever going to happen, so I'm just saying it for effect, or I'm saying it because I'm confident it will never be used against me because I think it's so unlikely, so then that commitment doesn't take effect. But if it's more reasonable, or if it's something that, listen, I'm saying I recognize this could happen and therefore I'll accept the penalty that may come with it, that would be a different story. So here too, the Ritva seems to be working within that type of distinction, that yes, I'm kind of accepting responsibility for what will happen if I fail to come through. And what's the foreseeable responsibility? That maybe you'll have to not only find somebody else with the job, but it may even cost you more, up to double. But more than that is not a foreseeable possibility, and therefore not included in this implicit promise. Okay, so far so good? So that's one reason. Again, that parallels what we saw the other direction. The same svara, the Ritva that we saw discussing the worker's obligation, the employer's obligation to the workers, explaining the worker's obligation to the employer. So too, another theory that you find is that it's based on garmi. They indirectly caused him a monetary loss, so therefore they're liable to fix it. And that's something that the Shach and the Vilna Gaon and the Chazon Ish record as an explanation of this din. And they attribute it to Tosfos and the Rush. So it's interesting because that's not exactly what Tosfos and the Rush say. They say that in the context of what we've been talking about till now, about the other direction. So Tosfos, you know, for example, Tosfos over here at Ayin Vav Amud Beis said that about the obligation of the employer to pay the workers. So these Achronim are assuming it cuts both ways, the same din, and the same Rishonim who say that about the employer's obligation, that's how he understands the worker's obligation. That they basically caused him damages, but it's more than simply causational, it's garmi rather than grama, and therefore they have to pay. So now you could ask the same question we asked a minute ago. Right, that if it's a mazik rule, So again, why is it limited? Right? Why should it be only double their wages? Let it be whatever the loss is. Because there's no reason to see any real correlation. Right? Because this whole point, where is the loss cost to him? The loss is that there's a correlation if he can actually find other workers. But if he can't find other workers, so then the loss could be in his materials, which may have nothing to do with how much he was paying. So why should it be limited to twice their wages? So here the Mishpatei Achoshen discusses this. And he suggests that if you believe that Garmi is a knas, right, so then you could say one of two things. You could say, first of all, a knas, maybe we only impose in generally likely situations, we call shtiach, like this basic rule that we have that a modern bezdin only functions in likely situations. So again, how likely is it that he's not going to be able to find workers for less than twice their going rate, less than twice the previous rate? Or, similarly, if you say that Garmi becomes Garmi instead of Grama, when it's a definite loss, or it's a clear loss, so again, the idea that it's going to cost him more than twice as much than his original wages that he was going to pay is pretty unlikely. So it gets out of the realm of Bari Hezekiah, that maybe if he has to scamper for workers more quickly, he'll have to pay more. We acknowledge it could be more than the original rate. But that it should be more than twice, that's not likely, and perhaps Ezal didn't put a knas under those circumstances.
And Tosos originally suggested that because of Garmi, so he should, his Havmi at least, he should pay Schar Batala, so Schar Batala is also a knas.
So Garmi might be a knas. That's it. If you
whether,
believe
the
whole concept of Garmi might be that if you say really Grama should be Pater.
Right.
So we have on the one hand direct Hezek is Chayev Ben Atara, and Grama is Pater. So Garmi occupies this middle space. So some understand certainly a machlokas, what is Garmi? Some understand that Garmi is basically direct liability. So you're Chayev Ben Atara. And others understand that, no, really Garmi is concept, it's Grama. You're not really Chayev. But we don't want to let people cause indirect damages, and Garmi is already too close to home, so Chazal maybe put a knas to say that you shouldn't be too lax in causing people damages. So then the question is, if it's a knas, and then maybe it's limited to those circumstances. And maybe that's what Garmi is about. Now there is an interesting machlokas harishonim, which is pretty important here, that if you recall, when we were going in the other direction, so we said Garmi was one answer, and Davar Ha'avad is a different answer. And we mentioned the Nafkamina, if you recall, that Rabbi Akiva Eger said, what if the rate changes afterwards? We mentioned some differences between the two. So what we just said now would kind of combine the two. That would say Davar Ha'avad is based on Garmi. So is that the only way to understand it? Probably not. So here's an interesting question. There is a machlokas rishonim about the following point. Does this din only apply if he could have hired other workers yesterday but he didn't because he thought he had these guys? Or does it apply even if he couldn't have hired workers yesterday? Most Rishonim, look at Yosef and the Magen Mishnah and the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch, they all say that it only applies if he could have hired somebody else yesterday. While the Beis Yosef and the Shach, they quote the Ramban. The Ramban is quoted by a Talmud of the Rashba. It says it applies even if he couldn't have hired anybody yesterday. So the Gra explains the first view as saying that basically it's because this is Garmi, Davar Avad is Garmi. So we hold him liable for, we hold them liable for the loss they created. But had they not come in and accepted the job, he would have been better off, he would have gotten somebody else, and he wouldn't have had a loss. But if that's not true, if they wouldn't hire somebody else, so then, if you wouldn't hire somebody else, so then it's not their fault. So that seems to be one way to explain it. That it's basically a function of Garni, and that's why you have that distinction. Now you could say that the Rishonim would disagree, this Ramban and the Rashba, the Ramban quoted by a Talmud of the Rashba, so they hold that it's not about Garni, and it's about something else. The problem is it's not really perfect, because there's a reason why they disagree. The reason they disagree is because they say you could never actually establish that he couldn't have hired somebody else yesterday. Because even if you say there weren't workers around and that the market was very slim, we have a principle perhaps that Ein Adam Roa Mamonu Avod V'Shoseik. A person's not going to let his money go to waste. So that if he sees that he's going to have this problem, then even if there wasn't people to find, he would push and he'd find somebody. So maybe it's still a kind of Garmi logic, they're just expanding the territory. They're just saying that we can't ever establish that he wouldn't have found somebody.
That's where it's quoted within the Ramban, or
yeah. So the Pesach Choshen, with Bloy, who we've mentioned in the past, so he has an interesting suffix based on that. Says that if we have this principle that somebody won't let his money go to waste, so he'll push to make sure that it happens. So when do we invoke that? Do we invoke that only when there's a monetary loss? Or davar ha'avad doesn't always mean a monetary loss. It could mean that, let's say, there's a funeral, like the Gemara gives an example. Let's say you need instruments for a funeral or for a wedding, and you're not going to have them, so it's not that the money is lost, but the opportunity is lost. So would you also apply that same logic and say that he's definitely going to act on it? So that all of that would suggest that really Davar Avid is based on Garmi. However, Bekiva Eger disagrees, and if you recall, it kind of works out, because Bekiva Eger is the same one who asserted in our previous conversation that Davar Avod and Garmi are two different reasons. So Rabbi Akiva Eger asks a question, which is what goes back to what Aaron was saying before. That if it's based on Garmi, it's based on Mazik, so then why don't we make the workers pay out of their pocket? Right? Why don't we say that not only can you force them to work, but they should simply pay for damages? Why don't we say that? Yeah, so who is it? It's actually, I was about to discuss it, but I haven't discussed it yet. All right, so we'll come to it in a second, who the Rishon says that. We'll look at it together. So that's the Rabbi Akiva Eger uses that to say that it's not about Garmi, but it's about something else. This is the nature of commitment to the relationship between the workers. Now, as Adin was about to point out, it is worth noting that there is one Rishon, who's a Das Yafi, who does say the workers do have a fee of mamon and do have to actually pay. And that's the Hagos HaShri. If you want to look at it, it's in Siman Beis in the Rush. Let's just look at it together quickly for a second. Hagos HaShri. So he says, "Vim davar avid shalidei garmaso nasei savid." Nirali the chayavim l'shalim kol hafseido mishum dina de garmi. Demai shna mi balabayish garam lasida and shachayev afilu b'dvarim below kinyan. And so that's what the Hagos HaShri asserts, that he thinks that logic has it that if they caused him a monetary loss, they should be chayev to pay money for that. And you recall, when we talked about this last week, we assumed that that was not the case. That's the way most Rishonim say. But this is Das Yachid, the Hagol Satri, who says that there is such a obligation. And that would therefore flow, that it's they caused the damage and they have to pay for it. Hi.
I don't remember who it was, but there's definitely a Rishon who made a filo between the two different, like between Hesed Mamon and Hesed Ratzon. And he said that in Hesed Mamon, the workers would also be chayav. He says the same thing, but there's definitely different Rishon. I can't remember who it was.
Okay, well, maybe he's quoting this. But what's also interesting, if you read the whole Hagol Satri, you see it's here in Siman Beis. So he disagrees with the other Rishonim in two ways. Because he raises this question, why don't we just say they should have to pay cash? And then he goes on to say that they should pay cash. So why does the Gemara not say that? Because the Gemara is talking about a case where it's not really their fault because he couldn't have hired others without them. So it means he's arguing in two ways, because he's saying they do have to pay cash, and that there's a din davara avod even if he couldn't have found other workers. Other Rishonim will say there's no cash obligation, and that this whole din only comes into discussion when he could have found other workers. So it's a double machlokas, like Hagol Satri and all the other Rishonim. Okay, so that's all interesting. And then there is a view. Again, this directly parallels what we discussed last week. It's also the same discussion, just implying in the other direction. So the Nesivis, we saw, who said that this whole din was a takanas chachamim. The whole din of Davar Avid is a takanas chachamim. It doesn't follow any existing din min haTorah. And he says it in both ways, that this din, that the workers have to have the responsibility for the work to get done, that that is essentially a takanas chachamim. So the Nesivis says that. The Drisha also says it. And the Maharik and his Chuvis and the Sharash and Kuflam Gimel, the Maharik says that this is, he kind of has a suffix about it. He says they have to remedy it, midin o knasa. Either it's the din or it's a knas, but that's what happens. So some of the Achronim assume that if it's a knas, you know, if it's basically a takanas chachamim, so then it presumably wouldn't carry on to descendants. So the Yorshim, if let's say the workers die, so do the Yorshim have a responsibility to follow through here? Probably not. While if you say it's a monetary debt like the Ritva, so then maybe they would have to carry through. So those are essentially some of these explanations. Now, just to make one more point, and then we'll run out of time, so I guess the consensus is that we'll push off Halachah until after we chazer everything else. So we'll start chazara tomorrow. But what about this very important point, very interesting issue? And again, Blinetter, I'll just give you some Armakomos based on what we said so far to look at, so you'll have it for tomorrow for chazara. So, what does this din mean? That, and this is related to what Adin was asking yesterday, although he said he was asking something different, but it's also related to what Aaron asked today, that, okay, so if the workers want to pull out, he can either hire somebody else at their expense, or he can maneuver them into working. But can he force them to work at the existing rate? Can he, let's say, get Bezdin involved and say, have the Bezdin say, workers, it's not right, you're causing him a loss? You have to do the job? Is that an option? So what do you think? So the Gemara is not really clear about it, right? The Mishnah doesn't mention that as an option. But a lot of the Rishonim, the Rif and the Rambam and the Rush and the Shulchan Aruch and Shin Lamed Gimel Hey all essentially sound like that is an option. That you can basically force them to work. And the tour sounds a little bit different. The tour does not sound like that's an option. So what seems to be the machlokas there, and essentially, if you take a look, here's another Marmakom. Very interesting. Take a look at this tomorrow. This is going to invoke a sugya that we haven't got to yet. About Paul Yochalach Subachatzi Hayom, right, that we know that we haven't discussed it yet, but there is a rule that a poel has the ability to pull out. So the Rishonim here assume that a poel or a kablin, nobody can pull out if it's a davar ha'avad, if it's going to cost a loss to the guy. So look at the Popula Charifta on the Rush, an Os Tzadi. And what he basically explains is that what does davar ha'avad mean? It means that they don't have the right to pull out. It means that the whole possibility of pulling out only applies when you're not causing the other guy a loss. But if you're going to cause the other guy a loss, you don't have the right to pull out. So in other words, Beis Din should be able to enforce it because it's simply not a right that they have.
So what's it doing in the Mishnah then?
Sorry?
What's the penalty doing in the Mishnah?
The penalty means that essentially if they can't get Beis Din to come in and do something, he has these kind of Ovid Inish Dinul and Afshay rules. These are things he could do on his own. It's harder to get a Beis Din to do it. And that to get a court order in general is not so simple. So the point is that theoretically they have this option, but it's an extension of the fact that essentially it's not their right to pull out.
It's not consistent with the end of the Mishnah, or like the safe, or like Yadu Al-Yonah that's talking about actual, like, the way it works, but they say it's inconsistent that this is, like,
so that's
this is like a Bidiyah, not Bidiyah's
Mishnah, so that's
like not what should happen, but the rest of the Mishnah is, it doesn't like.
Well, that's interesting. So that's actually how the Tor, maybe why the Tor says what he says. So the Tor essentially says it like that. That Yad Damal Tachtona, that basically since they pulled out, they're at a disadvantage, so he has these remedies. While other Rishonim seem to say it a little more strongly, that essentially it's not their right to pull out of that. This is an exception to the pulling out of the Mishnah. And basically, what does the Mishnah say? That you can pull out of a deal if there's no problems, but you have Tyromis. Unless it's a davar ha'avad. That's how these Rishonim seem to say it, and that therefore essentially all of this consequence that they have to have it fixed at their expense is a consequence of the fact that they can't pull out. Right. So if you look, you should look at the whole Popula Charifta, because it's interesting, but it's very interesting, and we'll come back to it in the sugya of Kol Yochel Achzu B'Chatzi Hayom. But the last line, just the part that doesn't invoke that, is B'davar ha'avad hayaniru lahem shalo lasseis lahem yad Shiachsiru hold the davar avidu. They're just not allowed to pull out because they're going to cause a loss. He's talking even to Poel where there's a special schus to back out. So essentially, that seems to be a machlokus harishonim, all these rishonim against, let's say, the Tor. And there are a lot of achronim who back up the Tor. So in the later generations, it's more of a machlokus. But that essentially, do you see this whole din as essentially extending the agreement that they just simply don't have the right to back out? Or that, no, they could back out, but there is a remedy that the boss has because they're at a disadvantage since they messed him over. So let's just quickly review what we spoke about today, and I'll let you go. So essentially we talked about what is the basis of the obligation of the workers to make good, or the right of the employer to fix his problem at their expense, in the context of a davar ha'avad, and a number of theories in Rishonim, which parallel roughly the basic theories we saw going in the other direction. First, the idea of arvus, that the Ritva has in both directions. So the question is, why is it limited to twice their wages? And he basically explains, because that's all they could have reasonably foreseen, so that's the nature of their commitment. Then Dina Degarmi, which a lot of Achronim say, and they put it in the mouth of Tosfos and the Rush, but it's a little bit questionable because the Tosfos and the Rush were talking in the other direction, but maybe it's true. And then again, the question, why only double the wages? So we mentioned the possibility that if it's about a Knas, so then maybe the Knas is limited when it's not foreseeable, or when it's simply not likely that that's going to happen, that it's going to cost that much, there's going to be twice the expense. Question?
Maybe it's not likely because, in the one where the arvus about the Ritva, it could be that they're not expecting that it's a din. Mm-hmm. Isn't that reverse logic?
No, that basically, if it's all based on their commitments, then the question is, so why should it not be whatever the loss is? So that's what he's explaining, that the commitment is based on the premise that it's, that okay, we're willing to make good our problems that we caused, but how much could we expect to have to do? So it'll cost twice as much, but it's going to cost more than that. It's not reasonable to expect. And then we mentioned the major machlokus Rishonim, whether or not this concept applies if he could not have hired other workers yesterday, which the Gra took to mean that this is that Garmi is a function of a davar avad is a function of garmi, so it's all based on his laws. Other Rishonim might disagree, except for the fact they don't really disagree in concept, but they disagree based on this idea that a person will just push hard to make sure he doesn't lose his money. Pisgei choshen tzafek, if that means just money or any type of even non-monetary loss. And then the question is also, if it's really garmi, and that therefore nezikin, so like Rabbi Akiva Eiger says, so how come they're not obligated to pay out of their pocket? They're not obligated to pay cash. It happens to be that Hagos HaShri is the Dasi Yachid who says they do have to pay cash, and says, disagrees with Rabbi Shonim in two ways, one in saying it's a cash obligation, and that there's a din of Davar HaAvad, even if they couldn't have hired somebody else the other day. And then we also mentioned the possibility of being at Takanas Chachamim, which the Nesivis and the Prisha and the Marik has a suffix about. So then Machlokas about whether or not the Yorshim will have to take over if it doesn't happen. And also major Machlokas, whether or not you can force the workers to actually work, that doesn't force the workers to work. And that a lot of Rishonim seem to say yes, the Gemara doesn't address it, a lot of Rishonim say yes. And the Torah says no, apparently. And what seems to be the machlokas there is all those who say yes, as the Papula Charifta explains, and as others sound as well, Lashon Shulchan Aruch sounds like this also, but essentially in the case of a Davar Avad, they have no right to back out, and therefore remedies are available. All right, to let you go, and tomorrow, God willing, we'll start with
even if you say the...